You will find we are in Matthew today. Our text for this morning is Matthew, and we will be in chapter 5 and looking at verses 14 through to 16 today. Matthew chapter 5, verses 14 through to 16. Now, we were here a few months ago in June, and which wasn't too long ago by my preaching assignments, but long enough ago, I think, to require a recap. So we will do that. Last time we were in verse 13, and we were looking at Jesus' words, "Ye are the salt of the earth." Now, today we're going to continue to the next verses of the Sermon on the Mount, where Jesus says, "Ye are the light of the world." And we come through verses 14 to 16 to do that. So let's read our text, and then we'll just dig into our content for today. From verse 14. "Ye are the light of the world. A city that is set on a hill cannot be hid. Neither do men light a candle and put it under a bushel, but on a candlestick, and it giveth light unto all that are in the house. Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father which is in heaven." So as we study through this morning's text, we're going to be referring back to the Beatitudes. And if you're not familiar with the Beatitudes, they are the verses at the beginning of chapter 5, specifically coming through from verses 3 through to 9. And the reason for referring back to them is that they're not just an introduction to chapter 5 and the Sermon on the Mount. They really lay that foundation for everything else that follows, because what Jesus is showing us in the Beatitudes is what it looks like to belong to his kingdom. And he describes his people here, and you can follow with me if you like. We're going from verse 3. He describes his people as being poor in spirit. And then in verse 4, he describes them as mourning over their sin, and then leading them to a place of meekness in verse 5, hungering and thirsting for righteousness. They are merciful peacemakers who are pure in heart. This is how he describes his people. And he's describing those believers who are being shaped by God's grace from the inside out. And that's important to remember, because the Beatitudes is not something we can achieve ourselves. It is something that God produces in us. So they're not a checklist that we kind of tick off as we go through each Beatitudes. They're not a moral code. They're a description of those believers who are being shaped by God's grace. If we were to summarize the Beatitudes, the question they answer is this: what does a Christian look like? But when we come on to this teaching about light of the world, the question they answer is, what difference do my people make? And Jesus provides the answer for us in his teaching, because he says, first of all, ye are the salt of the earth, and then you are the light of the world. Now, last time we used a single word to describe what it was to be salt of the earth, which was to be an influence, and more specifically, to be a preserving influence. So like salt, we are to be rubbed into society to stop that spread of corruption or restrain what would otherwise run unchecked. So salt is the preserving influence that a believer has in the world, and light is then the visible witness that a believer has in the world. Now, as a preserving influence, salt quite often works quietly in the background, or most of the time in the background. But light is the visible witness of a believer, so that shines into the darkness. I'm going to come on to that in a moment, but just one more thing by way of background. Notice that everything Jesus has said so far flows from a life that is being transformed by his grace. And we must keep that in mind, because Jesus isn't simply telling us to try harder. He's not just telling us to be better Christians. He's describing what naturally flows from a life that is being transformed by his grace. And the more we become like him, the more our lives display the character that we just read of in the Beatitudes. And the more that character then becomes visible as salt and light. in our lives. So with this in mind, let's continue into our text for this morning, and we're going to start by asking the question, if light is the visible witness of a believer, then why does the world need light? Why does the world need light? And Jesus says in verse 14, you are the light of the world. And his words assume something very very clear, that light is only necessary when there is darkness. Okay, we don't have to look very far to see that darkness. We see it in every part of our world, in the corruption, broken relationships, in the violence, in the suffering, in the injustice in the world. In some areas, you might say we have progressed. And I remember we thought about that last time, and there were various different ways that we have progressed as a society. There are different ways that we have modernized, but nothing has cured the corruption of the human heart, which means the effects of sin continue to surround us every day. Now, if you are in any doubt about the effects of sin, you just need to have a quick look at the world news. And I was looking at the world news this week, and I was picking out some different things from the headlines. I thought I would just share some of those. We'll just go through a few of those. Here in Ireland, I'm sure most people would have heard, five teenagers lost their lives in a horrific motorway collision after a car was driven the wrong way down the M9 in County Kildare. Four members of another family were seriously injured during that collision. In Sudan, northeast Africa, millions continue to suffer through a civil war. More than 200,000 people recently displaced by fighting in the region. In Myanmar, Southeast Asia, civil war continues as violence and suffering. This week, 14 more people killed in an airstrike on a Buddhist monastery. In the Middle East, Israelis and Palestinians continue to bear the consequences of that violence and hatred. And in Ukraine, there were so many headlines from Ukraine this week, I wouldn't know which to pick, but war continues. There is death and there is destruction. And the point is this, these are different countries, they're different circumstances, different situations, even different kinds of human suffering. But under it all lies the same problem that the Bible has been warning us about for thousands of years, that darkness has brought sin into the world. Now, we could, of course, point to the darkness, that it is out there, and we can become quite detached about it all because we read the news and it's something that is happening over there. It's not affecting us personally. But that's not what Scripture says. It's not just about what's out there. It's about what's inside us too. Now, Paul is writing to the believers in Ephesus. Ephesus, that a city was deeply influenced by pagan religion. There was a lot of idolatry in particular, and Paul is encouraging those believers who've come out of all of that not to go back into that. And he says, for ye were sometimes darkness, but now ye are light in the Lord. Walk as children of light. So they were once darkness, but now they are light in the Lord, and Paul tells them to walk as children of light. But you've got to notice also what he doesn't say, because he doesn't say you were living in darkness. Okay, he does not say that you were surrounded by darkness. He says you were that darkness. And I think that's something very significant for us to consider, because the problem is never that we lived in a dark world, it's that we were the darkness itself. Let's go to another verse on this. This is Jesus speaking, John chapter 3, verse 19, and he says, and this is the condemnation, that light is come into the world and men loved darkness rather than light. So Jesus is making clear here what the Bible declares, that apart from Christ, we belong to darkness. Now that contrast between darkness and light is used throughout Scripture to show what man is by his very nature. We'll go to one more verse. This is from 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 9. And we read, that you show forth the praises of him who has called you out of darkness into his marvelous light. So God hasn't simply rescued us from darkness. He's called us into his marvelous light so that we can show forth his praises. And so if that's a diagnosis, then the answer can't only be education. It can't only be self-improvement. It can't only be better moral standards. The only answer to a dark and decaying world is Christ. And that's exactly where he takes us now, because he looks at ordinary men and women whose lives have been transformed by his grace and says, you are the light of the world. And when he says you are the light of the world, he's not calling us to manufacture a light of our own. He's calling us to display the light that only he can produce. He is the light that shines in us. So if the world is in darkness and Christ works within believers to be lights of the world, the next question is why? Why would Jesus look at ordinary men and women like us and say, I want you to be lights of the world? And the answer we're going to look at next. What is God's plan for his people? God's plan for his people. Now, first of all, it's helpful to remember that this was always God's plan for his people. We could go back to the Old Testament. We can follow the journey of Israel, and we can see that it was never his plan simply to save a nation and then remove them from the world. His plan was that they would display his glory through their nation. Now, through the prophet Isaiah, God speaks of his servant as a light to the nations. I'll just read that now. It says, I will also give thee for a light to the Gentiles, that thou mayest be my salvation unto the end of the earth. Now, that calling was reflected in Israel's role among the nations. But Israel, as we know from studying these months in Jeremiah, were not really able to do that. They repeatedly failed to live as the people that God called them to be. And instead of influencing the nations around them, they were influenced by those nations themselves. And I think if we're honest, that's not just Israel's problem. It's one of the constant dangers for us as Christians today. If we're not careful, and we have to be so careful, the world begins to influence us. In fact, I would go as far as to say that if we're not intentionally guarding about the things that we look at and the places that we go to and the things that we do, then we will find that those things are already influencing us. So we have to be very cautious about that. Israel, of course, as we know, they adopted the idols and values of the nations around them. And by the time Jesus gave this Sermon on the Mount, they had largely lost sight of their calling. And the religious leaders of the time, they were, and we always go to the Pharisees for our example, don't we? They were very outwardly religious, but inwardly they were far from Christ. But everything Israel failed to be, Christ perfectly fulfilled. So later in John's Gospel, we go to John's Gospel here, chapter 8, verse 12, and Jesus declares, I am the light of the world. He that followeth me shall not walk in darkness, but shall have the light of life. And that is God's plan, to transform those who follow Christ so that his life and character become visible in us. The character that he shows us in the Beatitudes, then we can shine as lights of the world. Now, I used to love fireworks as a child, and we always used to celebrate the 5th of November, and I won't go into all of the ins and outs of that particular celebration, but it was on the 5th of November. A lot of people will be very familiar with that. And we used to go to our neighbours, or they would come to our house, and we'd have a big bonfire, and there would be fireworks. And I was never allowed to play with the fireworks as a child, unfortunately. But I was given sparklers, big sparklers, not little party ones, but big sparklers. And then I would try and light them with a match. And if you've tried to do that, you hold the match up to the sparkler, but you can never generate enough heat, and you end up burning your fingers as a consequence. But if you go and find somebody that has got a sparkler that is already lit, and you press your sparkler into the source of that light, and it goes, it lights up, and you tear around the garden being illuminated by your sparkler in the darkness. But the point is this: that sparkler alone in the box, and there's nothing. But when it comes into contact with that which is illuminated, then it comes into life and it sparkles away, and you can almost not stop it from sparkling. You can't conceal that light. This is what Jesus wants from us, for our light to spill out as lights of the world. And now you can be forgiven for thinking, well, I'm not going to be very good at shining as a light in the world. Well, I've got good news for you today, because God has actually always been very good at using those that thought they would not be good at shining as lights in his world. And I've got some examples here today. And I'm sure you'll know these. So think about when Jesus chose the 12. He didn't choose the elite. He didn't choose the highly educated. He chose fishermen from Galilee and a tax collector. Think about David. When he was just a shepherd boy, he was the one that God called to deliver Israel from the Philistines. He could have called upon Saul. He was a kind of mighty king of that time, but he didn't. He called upon David. And David didn't even use Saul's massive armor. He actually went onto that battlefield with just a sling and a couple of stones. And he could not have done that in his own strength. But perhaps the best example of all is when Jesus came into the world, because he didn't choose a family that was wealthy or was noble. He chose a peasant girl and a stable. And that's the way it's always been in Scripture. Not many mighty and not many noble. But that's the right way for it to be, because that way God gets the glory in the humbleness of those that serve his purposes. Now, you could also be forgiven for thinking that being a light of the world is a calling for other people that we sometimes consider to be gifted or special, you know, in some way that we're not. And we can all do this sometimes. And I mean, famous evangelists, perhaps on TV, or even missionaries like AsiaLink. I was reading an article from them this morning, and they're now sending Bibles and people with those Bibles across the Himalayas and reaching people that nobody will have reached before. It is incredible what they're doing. You might be thinking it's only for pastors or for deacons or for children's teachers or for elders, or basically, you see where I'm going with this, basically anybody but me. But that's not God's plan. That's not what Jesus says. He says it's you and me. He says you are the light of the world, and he's speaking to us, every believer. Every one of us has a place where Christ intends our light to shine. And if you think about that tomorrow, today, actually, sorry. Think about that now. But tomorrow, most of us, probably all of us in some way, will be interacting with people. So some might be dropping kids off to school. Some might be dropping kids off to college. Some might be going to college. You might be at the shops. You might be at work. You might be with family. You might be traveling on the train, on a bus, on a taxi, on a plane, perhaps. And actually, just thinking about that, I was dropping the Moors off at their first leg of their journey to go to Indianapolis yesterday, or a couple of days ago. Was to drop them at Carrick bus station. So I dropped them off, and I was just driving out of the bus station, and I could see Josh was already talking to the first man in the queue. And I thought, at some point, that man's going to say, "So what do you do?" And I know what the answer is going to be. And I know the gospel is going to be in there somewhere. And so it's just a tiny example. But some of us will just be talking to our neighbors over the garden fence. But these ordinary places, they're all part of God's plan to shine for his people. You see, the missionaries like AsiaLink and the famous evangelists on TV, I mean, they're fantastic. I'm not knocking them at all. They're not the ones where you are. They're not in the ordinary places that you will be. They won't be sharing the gospel with your neighbor. Now, you could also be forgiven for thinking or saying, and sometimes I hear people say this just in a kind of jokey way, if only we had two of such and such, or if only we could replicate this person. And we've always got somebody in mind that we consider to be, you know, particularly gifted for the job. But I have to say again, that's not what God says. That's not his plan. He doesn't say, nominate these people and just keep sending them. He says it's you and me. And just before we move on from this section, I'll mention one more thing. Have you ever considered how powerful your testimony is? how you came to Christ, your experiences, your challenges that you had to overcome. They're unique to you. And there are many believers out there who haven't come to Christ yet that would relate to you and your journey better than anybody else in this church. But you have to share that testimony. And that brings us on to the two pictures here. Jesus now gives us to explain what that visible witness looks like. A city set on a hill and a candle under a bushel. So let's just go back to verse 13 a moment. Just have a look at verse 13 in chapter 5. And Jesus says, "You are the salt of the earth." And I just want to come back here for a moment, because remember last time we said that salt that stays in a salt cellar, that's no good. Okay, we can't stay in a salt cellar or salt grinder, salt shaker, whatever you call it, the salt thing, because it's great while we're all here and we're all together worshiping, we're all salty little Christians together here, but we've got to get out of the salt grinder if we're going to influence the world. And remember also last time we were saying that in the ancient world, salt was rubbed into the meat to stop it going bad. So it was a preservative. And the point Jesus was making is that we are the preserving influence in the world, helping to hold back that corruption. But in order to be a preserving influence, we've got to be out there mixing with the world, remaining distinct from it and not being influenced by it. Now, in the same way, Jesus gives us this warning concerning light. He says, "You are the light of the world. A city that is set on a hill cannot be hid." And so the point is this. Salt can only be a preserving influence when it comes into contact with what it is preserving. Now, light can only shine into the darkness when we're not concealing the light. I'm going to come on to that now. So Jesus, he gives us this illustration of a city that is set on a hill. And you can imagine a city set up high on a hill. You're not going to have trouble seeing it. It's up high, it's on a hill. You can see it from far away. And if it's got little lights sparkling away, then you're going to see those lights, particularly in the darkness. So it's an easy illustration. Those cities and towns, they can't be hidden. You can see them, they're full of lights. And Jesus' point is our light is to shine into the darkness. The city doesn't have its own visibility. It's shining from those lights that are shining within it. In the same way, Jesus has already told us that he is changing his people. Okay, so that Beatitudes character described the transformed character of the believer that makes it possible for those lights to be shining for Christ. As his character is formed in us, it becomes increasingly more difficult for that light to remain hidden. When he illuminates our lives, he doesn't just add Christianity onto what you already were. He changes the very course of our lives. Now, if you're sitting here this morning and genuinely wondering, am I in the light or am I in the darkness? Then that is a question that you really shouldn't brush aside, because when Jesus illuminates a life, there is a real difference in that life. Now, Paul writes of this to the believers in Colossians. He's describing what's happened to them, and he says, "Who has delivered us from the power of darkness and has translated us into the kingdom of his dear Son." So in other words, he's saying he's come along and he's plucked you out of your predicament. And so you were going your way in the darkness and now you're going his way in the light. So there's a very distinct before and after. And when we're going Christ's way in the light, he tells us we cannot be hid. Let's go back to our text. And he says, "Neither do men light a candle and put it under a bushel, but on a candlestick, and it giveth light unto all that are in the house." So the principle here is that you don't have your light lit for Christ and then cover it up. Why would you do that? If your light is lit, you let it shine. In fact, you put it on a lampstand, and then it can give light to all who are in the house. Now, with the illustration that he gives here, he would have had those little terracotta lamps in mind, and you have your spout on one end, you've got the handle on the other end, you've got like a a floating wick in the middle, and you can trim your wick and then you light it and it will simply burn all night long. I have a caveat in my notes though to say they burn all night long unless your wife comes along and snuffs them all out before she goes to bed. So there'll be no little terracotta pots burning in our house. But Jesus is making a serious point here. He's saying, how foolish would it be to have your light burning brightly and then put something over the top of it? Why would you do that? Well, I can point to a number of reasons why I might want to conceal my light, and you might be able to relate to some of these. The first would be if there is some kind of willful rebellion or sin. When I'm actually doing something that I know is wrong, but I do it anyway because I want to. No surprise that my light is concealed. Second one is just laziness. I don't want to shine. I don't want to be that person. I don't want to do what Jesus says. I don't want to go out. It's someone else's responsibility. Let somebody else's light shine. And then the third one, probably the most common actually, is fear. It's just fear. I'm afraid that someone will see my light. I'm afraid somebody will see my light and identify me with Jesus. And what we tend to find is that it's fine being a Christian until it starts to cost us something. But let me remind you, what Jesus has told us is that we are blessed when we suffer for him, for righteousness' sake. And in fact, just come back to me to chapter 5 and have a look, first of all, at verse 10. So Jesus says, blessed are they which are persecuted for righteousness' sake, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. But he doesn't leave it there. He gives a double blessing, because after that, in verse 11, he says, blessed are ye when men shall revile you and persecute you and shall say all manner of evil against you falsely for my sake. And remember, he's giving these blessings after he's told us how blessed we are for living in the life that he's intending for us to live. So one is following the other. But let's not stop there, actually, because in verse 12, he says, rejoice and be exceedingly glad, for great is your reward in heaven, for so persecuted they the prophets which were before you. So these are blessings indeed. And do you know, the challenge for us as being a light in the world is that as soon as it becomes about us and our perceived weaknesses, then we're in trouble. And can you imagine if David had gone onto the battlefield to face Goliath only in his own strength? It would have been an entirely different outcome. So coming back to our text, Jesus then personalizes the message because he says, let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father which is in heaven. So Jesus isn't telling us to perform good works so people will admire us. I think we know that. And in the very next chapter, he's warning us against righteousness for the sake of it, or just to be seen by others. The difference in the work is the purpose. We're not seeking attention for ourselves. We're living openly for Christ so that ultimately the glory goes to God. So we're going to start to kind of draw things together a little bit now. Jesus begins with the Beatitudes. He shows us what his people look like, people whose lives are being transformed by the grace of God. And then he says, you are the salt of the earth. That transformed character is to have an influence upon the world around us. Salt preserves, it holds back decay. And we said that salt can't work well if it's safely tucked away in the salt grinder. As comfortable as that is for us, we are called to come into contact with the world. Then Jesus says, you are the light of the world. Okay, light works differently. Salt works quietly. Light is seen. It is that visible witness of the believer. And Jesus tells us we are not to conceal our light. Let your light so shine before men. So what does that mean for us? It means tomorrow morning, when we go back to our lives, Christ doesn't stop working in us. Just because it's not a church day or we're not here, it doesn't mean he's not working in us. He's still working in us. So wherever we are interacting with people, with family, talking to neighbors, whatever it might be, these are the places that Christ intends his character to shine within us. And don't try to manufacture something that is extraordinary. I know there's a temptation to think we need to do that or to suddenly be a super flamboyant person. We're not like that. Most of us are not like that. We are to be ourselves. But we need to let Christ's work be seen in us, because the light isn't ours. The light is Christ's. He's the one that brought us out of darkness. He's the one that changes our hearts. He's the one who develops that Beatitudes character within us. So where does that leave us this morning? And perhaps a question for us is, can people see something of Christ in me? Can they see the difference that he's making in me? And that's important, because we have to keep remembering where this message began. The Beatitudes don't begin with something that we can achieve ourselves. They begin with people who know they are poor in spirit. They are for people who know that they need God's grace to grow as believers. So tomorrow morning, let's remember what Jesus has said. You don't need to be someone special to be a light of the world. When you're a believer, you're already special, but you do need to let Christ's work be seen in you. And he tells us why in verse 16, because he says that you may see your good works and glorify your Father, which is in heaven. And perhaps that's the key thing for us to remember tomorrow. Christ transforms his people. He shines through his people, and he receives the glory. And let me finish with just maybe one more thought. If you're sitting here this morning and you're genuinely not sure if you're in the light, or perhaps you even know you're in that darkness, then the answer isn't to try harder or be a better person. The answer is you need Christ. Jesus said, "I am the light of the world. He that followeth me shall not walk in darkness, but shall have the light of life." So don't try to manufacture your own light. Christ is the light. Come to him. And for those that already belong to him, well, let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father, which is in heaven. Let's pray.